Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and the program you're listening to is Abled. Specifically, our topic today is going to be online learning. Is it connected or disconnected? And today we have the privilege of interviewing Oksana Rosinski. She is one of my former graduate students. Well, this was back, Oksana? 30, 40 years, I think, when I was teaching graduate school. Maybe not that long ago. But Oksana teaches, she's a specialist, and she teaches ELL, which stands for English Language Learners, in a public school in the Washington area. And she's also, this woman has got more things, more irons in the fire than anyone else I know. She is an adjunct professor at Seattle University. She's working on her doctorate. She completed her master's with me. Last year she was, weren't you teacher of the year or something at your, one of the schools you were at last year?
Yes, one time, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you'll get it again, I'm sure. And also, besides teaching school and working on her doctorate and teaching College Ignite, and she also manages a family. And I had the pleasure of getting to know her family and her kids. She has, let's see if I can get them all right, Oksana. Katrina is the oldest. And yes. Then, and how old is Katrina?
She's 18.
Oh my, she's 18?
Yes.
Oh my God, I can't believe that. Okay, I got to go on from there. And what's Daniel, 35? No. Daniel is the middle child, and then Sophia. And how old is
Sophia?
How old is Sophia?
Sophia is 11. She's 11, and Daniel is 14. So we have kids everywhere, elementary, middle, high, and running start. So we have an all, I guess, level of education. We have kids in all level of education.
And I think the last time I met Sophia, too, I think she's 11 going on 16. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Oksana, why don't, you know, one of the things we want to talk about is, you know, this pandemic and, you know, didn't it just hit us in the face? I mean, we kind of knew something was coming, but we had no idea of the consequences of it. That it would affect jobs, it would affect school, everything. And so let's look at your, first of all, let's look at the kind of the mother side of it. How did you manage working with kids at home on school and trying to work at the same time? That must have been extremely difficult. I think you told me one time you were going nuts, but I don't know if that's, the correct terminology to use. But tell me a little bit about that, Oksana.
You know, that's hard. And hello, Stephen. It's a pleasure to have you here, and thank you for inviting me. Last year when this just started, we thought we will be back. You know, we will be back and everything will be okay, but you know, as it progresses and everything, you know, it was that reality, right? It became the reality.
Yes.
So it was hard. We had to hire a babysitter for kids so they can stay on task. And you know, for older kids, I guess it was easier for it to manage because Katrina was already doing Running Start in the Green River Community College, so it wasn't bad. But this, you know, that part to be connected to other kids was very hard. And then when we found out that the kids will not be back in September, we had to take their college money and we had to use them for private school, and you know, we send our kids to private school so they can go to school and be with other kids. And for me, that's a major concern, be with other kids, you know, socialize with other kids, have this personal connection. So I guess this is how we, you know, be. But again, we are working hard, and our family, so we were blessed to set money, you know, ahead of time, and that's how we use them now, unfortunately. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, I'm sure that just the money concerns is difficult to everyone. And, you know, earlier I was talking to Eric Hogan, and he was saying that, you know, that in the Seattle District Schools, where his kids go, you know, kids really didn't even have computers and laptops for the first quarter. And so that was difficult, too. Let's talk a little bit about your students. And because you have English language learners, tell us a little bit about your class. What does it look like? You have kids speaking, you know, a variety of different languages. Just kind of set me up your day and working with these kids before pandemic.
So I, on my roster at my school, I have about 160 ELL students, English language learner students, and they speak, majority of them speak Vietnamese. We are in part of the, you know, area where we have majority of them speak Vietnamese, and next biggest population are Hispanics. And then we have some Punjabi, Russians, Ukrainians, and Chinese, Cantonese. So we have, it's about 160. So my district are, I believe it's very advanced, and we are using research-based SIOP instructions when all the teachers are trained, and we basically push in during the working day so I can come and work with students in the classroom, support the teachers, collaborate with the teachers, co-plan, and we do teaching together. We do co-teaching, a lot of it. And I also do some training for staff, how to appropriately address students' language needs in the classroom versus, like, to pull out. We do pull out, some pull outs, but that's for kids that are just recently arrived to the United States, and they need, I would say, strategic instruction in English. So we do take them out for 45 minutes a day, and we have special classes. So I serve from first grade to fifth grade, and I have a few newcomer group, which is pull out, and mostly do push in when I come to class and work with students directly in the classroom. That's how my working day. I'm super busy. I have, I have 45 minutes planning and then some lunch, but it's basically running around the school and working with kids. When the pandemic actually started, it was so difficult and so different stories. Just completely different.
It must
story.
Have been really even harder for these students, who, and you mentioned some of the newcomers, some of the new kids that are just coming into school from other countries, and yet that's got to be a culture shock. And then dealing with this pandemic and having to wear masks and everything else. Is that true?
Definitely. You know, and especially I would say it hit the hardest kids that are new to this country and the parents who do not speak English. And this disconnection, is the gap between us and, you know, education and them are even more wider now. We try to invite parents, and we have the hired translators and interpreters to talk to them. But it's still, you know, because they have to manage their work, and some of them lost their work, their jobs, and they are now kind of, you know, they their priorities definitely are not, you know, centered around online education. The gap is even wider. And I would say my district was very, I would say, on top of everything, organized, and they were able to provide computers. We were using the computers that were available in school, that we used before we went on lockdown, and these computers were distributed in a few weeks to all students, And we, you know, my administration, we're trying hard to deliver them to kids and all of the kids, to make sure that all kids have a computer at home. You know, another issue that we kind of, another block, I would say, was that kids didn't have internet connection. You know, they could have computer now, but they didn't have hotspot. So that was the district next move. And, you know, we were able to get some support from different tech organizations. And yes, kids got hotspots, and it's not perfect. And it's still, you know, depend on the weather. Sometimes the connection is so bad, and I'm frustrated of that because I couldn't hear kids. They couldn't hear me, and it's been lagging and stuff. But I would confidently say that kids have computers. You know, our families, each family,
do you think,
now have computers.
Oksana, do you think that that almost the parents need to be trained in the technology as much as the students?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And we realize that the next step, you know what, in my school, because I was working on, you know, my administration certificate, I decided to do the survey for parents one year. So I invited ELL families for dinner, and we kind of had a little training. They had to fill the survey, the school, the district survey online, and we had computers for them. So it was just a great idea because it's actually served us in the long run how to, you know, operate. But I still have families that use their cell phones during the class. And if I meet with kids, they have cell phones. It's hard because, you know, you can you imagine reading from the cell phone? And I bet the kids spend a lot of time on their electronics besides their online learning. So, yeah, some of them still using cell phones. Even they have computers, but it's more convenient. That's what they know well how to use. But I would say most of the families, and they know how to use internet now. They know how to navigate between different Zooms and classrooms. So I would say this is a positive thing that, you know, not all negative, but I see that as a positive. It's like technology and yeah, navigation.
Well, and I think, too, it is difficult. You know, I think even like with Daniel, I mean, Daniel is a great kid, but Daniel is a typical boy, and he likes to run around and move, and he's got his mind going on things in the classroom all the time. And I think that there's a lot of kids that are in that same situation where trying to sit down to a computer for a couple hours at a time, you know, has to be pretty difficult. Is that
it? Is Daniel he's a typical boy, and I would say he's an active side boy.
Yes.
And you know, he has to make noises. I mean, he is sitting and making noises in microphones. So I got one day I got three emails from his teacher saying that they had to mute him and they had to remove him from one of his class because, you know, he was making noises. And I can, I mean, he was back to school. He was, they've been in school since September, but they had to close the school for 1 week.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's extremely hard. I had to, you know, communicate with teachers and, you know, but I know that they will send me emails. And I'm not sure in public school how often if having, you know, many kids on the roster, having many different classrooms, especially in middle school, how, you know, teacher is available to send emails to all parents saying this about the kids' progress. And there is a huge problem with that, you know, keeping parents in touch and, you know, just letting them know what is going on.
I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I've heard from a lot of my former students and teachers is that they're getting just multiple emails, and it's almost impossible to keep on top of all the emails that they get from all the parents. And so that's got to be difficult, too. And I think, you know, one of the things you mentioned, you said, you know, we're blessed because we can afford to do this. But I think that, again, I think the gap widens from maybe some of the kids that you have, where English is a second language, that they may not have, and I'm not trying to stereotype them or put them into one category, but they may not have the, you know, financial ability, the technological skills to do that. How do you work with socialization? Is there some way that you could do that and do that online too?
This is hard. You know, When I have my classes, I try to. There's two things we are talking here. One is when we are teaching kids second language or bilingual students, right? We talked about CALP and we talked about VIX. So CALP is cognitive academic language proficiency, and that's what they, a new vocabulary that they are learning in school. And we are talking about that academic language, right, that they need for higher schooling and going on. A VIX is a basic interpersonal communication skills that every child needs. And it's the first language that the kids acquire when they, learning second language or the second language acquisition, right? And
right.
So VIX, I believe, is completely lost here in this online learning. CALP, I use mostly RAS Kids program because they have lessons plans and everything is ready for me. There, and it's aligned with Common Core standards, and it's also aligned with English language proficiency standards. So I try, I incorporate both in my lessons, and I use this research-based program if I need phonemic or phonics awareness to teach kids. But VIX is completely lost. And VIX, kids acquire VIX when they go outside, when they talk about their weekend, when they talk about they're, you know, just socializing outside on the playground, in the cafeteria, on the recess, at PE, and music. And this is not happening at all. And they do build their language, academic language, the CALP, they do build on VIX. So, this foundation, this brick is missing when we have online learning. I try, because I see kids a half an hour, my blocks, I have one Zoom, I open it at 9 o'clock, and I have kids coming. It's open the whole day. I leave for about more than an hour for planning and then break for lunch. And then kids come right after. I have one group after another. And, you know, I try to leave them some time to talk to each other, you know, just to for discussion. But it's so hard with kids that are shy, that are typically, they're quiet. And that's hard. Some kids, they don't want to even turn on their camera. And I try to be strict, and I try to say, you know, this is not an option. But I, at the same time, I understand they don't want it. They stay quiet, and I have to, you know, like, call on them, which I don't like to do. I believe kids need to be, if they want to say something, it needs to be voluntarily. We don't need to force kids, especially when they're learning second a language. But, you know, it's the only option. And I leave some time for kids to talk about their weekends and stuff. But, you know, if I have to wait in between giving them instructions, academic instructions, and spending time on that, I would choose academic instructions because, you know, it's that 30 minutes I have.
Yeah, that's, I think that that's just really amazing, all these things. And I don't think that as a Caucasian male living in the United States, I have a clue to what these kids are experiencing coming to this, and then with this COVID thing too. Do you think I've heard the statement, we're really just losing a year. Do you think that's true, or do you think there is value in this year and we can teach kids things?
You know, I can say completely that it's a loss. You know, I can say that we wasted a year. I believe this year definitely taught us a lot and prepared us because we relied on so many things we shouldn't rely. And technology is the first one, right?
Yes.
And then we relied on many things that, you know, we come back to school and this would happen, and it didn't happen. So I believe it prepared us. I would say it's a great awakening year when we know what we need to work on. And I believe the kids learn technology as never before. naturally, you know, by I have kids that cried, and I have kids that come to my class saying that they cannot log into their general education class. And, you know, this, like, I would come somewhere. I want to be somewhere rather than nowhere.
And, yes,
and I
yes.
This is, it was kind of for me, and the kid came one day because my Zoom is open the whole day, and the kid was crying. It's like, honey, I don't have you now. I have you in an hour. And she told me, you know, I can't log into my teacher, so I came here. So it was like they learned to advocate for themselves, and they're using what they have, like the resources. And seeing kids navigating between four different platforms when they are with me half an hour and switching between Google Classrooms and other platforms that we use in the district, and fast. I had to change my Zoom one day because it disappeared from my calendar. And Mike, I had to open the old Zoom and the new Zoom, and I asked kids to switch. And I was amazed how fast they could switch between one Zoom to a different Zoom. You have to type the number, you have to type the password, and they did it, even my first graders. So I would say technology-wise, kids are faster. They learn how to type, and but I also believe they need to handwrite their essays. I do believe that cognitive abilities, you know, they work when kids are working kinesthetically, and this piece is missing. The teachers are doing their, you know, best. They're working so hard, and they send projects home for kids to work on, and they, you know, they then the kids can present this project. So I believe it's not, I wouldn't say completely, the year was completely wasted. Some learning, yes, definitely, but I'm looking forward to go in person. I'm looking forward to have this human connection that we can substitute with online learning. And I believe that touch, and especially when I am learning about my students who need what, and if the kid needs food, if the kids need, especially with my ELL population, if they need shelter, if they need comfort, if they need someone to talk to about their harsh weekend, I miss that the most.
Yes.
And, you know, find out if the kid needs clothes or shoes. It's difficult to do on a computer and online because, you know, it's that the way I found out just by looking in kids' eyes, you know, and saying, I don't see, you know, you don't look happy today, honey. You don't want to talk about it. And that's when kids say, yes, I need this, or I'm going through this. And that's when the community, our school community can help these kids, can catch them on time. And, you know, and we can move forward with that. But I, you know, the students, especially the students with disabilities, the students that need that teacher, that need connection, that kid was definitely, for them, it was the hardest part. And I think ELL population is the second.
And I think also, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is that even just having masks, there are lots of clues that we get from looking at a person in the face and seeing how they react. I was in the store today and I ran into people that seemed to know me, but I had no idea who they were behind a mask. And I think that it's so important for kids to have that social connection with their teacher. And I know exactly what you mean, Oksana, when you're talking about, you know, if a kid comes in 10 minutes before class, you know they need something. If a kid hangs out 10 minutes after class, you know they need something. And I don't know if you remember when I was teaching my graduate class, but one of the things that a sheet that I passed out was a list of jobs. And I said, you know, how many of these jobs do teachers perform in a school? Are they mediators? You bet they are. Do they manage behavior? You bet they are. Are they friends? Well, they are friends to some kids. To some kids, they're a very positive connection to adults. And you and I both know that sometimes family life in with some of these kids, and I'm not just speaking about ELL kids or or special ed kids, but we know some of these kids have pretty darn hard lives. And and the teacher performs, even if the teacher just listens to them. And
I had a story to actually tell. I had a kid that cried every time we had break, and I don't it was a spring break or Christmas break, and I had the kid cried, and I asked why you're crying, and the kid the answer was, I don't want to go, you know, for a break, because the school was the safest place for this child. And I always, you know, when the, you know, these breaks come, I always reflect on what I heard from this child, that, you know, for some children, school is the safest place they could be. And not having this is heartbreaking. And you know, this having their food on time, you know, having their meal on time, having breakfast. I had kids coming hungry. And, you know, being able to provide. And the kids are not afraid to tell me that, you know, they're not hungry. Because if their basic needs are not met, based on Maslow, right, hierarchy of needs, if their basic needs are not met, there's no education. We cannot talk about anything, no learning, nothing could happen unless they are, you know, they're not hungry, unless they're not, you know, protected.
That is so true. And I remember when... you know, we've always had school lunch, but I remember, and this is, you know, a fault of mine, that when we started having breakfast at school, I thought, well, you know, that's not really the school district's responsibility. And then I thought to myself, you know, if the kids come to school and they're hungry, they're not going to learn. Mm-hmm. And so they're all part of the same thing. You know, the kids, like you say, the kids need to have those basic needs. They need to not worry about all through the morning when lunch is, if they have it, you know, and I've seen the breakfast, and they're, you know, they're not bad breakfast. So I think that that's what you bring up is really, really important. Do you think that you also have a better understanding, do you think the teachers have a better understanding of what also happens in the child's home because of this?
I think so. Yes and no. I mean, the parents that are, you know, advocating for their kids, they're always in contact. And it doesn't matter. They have access to emails. They have access to other forms, platforms of communication. But the parents that are working hard, where the parents that, you know, learning, online learning is not their priority because they have to think about how to provide for their family, I think there is a gap. And you know, you can talk to parents when parents bring your kids to school and you can just have a quick conversation. But in online learning, it's extremely hard. And not all kids are open about what is going on in their household. So, yeah, yes and no. Some teachers, they go above and beyond. I know some teachers, they do make home visits. They, you know, based on their social distancing and other guidelines, they visit their families and they ask what you need and if you need anything. Because we do have school supplies distribution once a week or twice a week, and we do have lunches distributions and where the parents can come and get their food. But again, for parents that are working or for parents that do not have cars, again, it's another roadblock that,
yes.
to get that. And I have kids that are saying, you know, I don't have my writing journal. So I ask them to write and I ask them to type, but they could say, I don't have writing journal. So I would contact
So you can provide
teacher.
That for them? You can
yes,
provide that?
Yes.
Yeah. That's
exactly. We have supplies. We have resources. And that's, I can't say for other districts, but that's something we try. And I know my administration would go above and beyond to get to kids.
Well, that's great. And let me just ask you this one last question. You know, you are one of my bright lights as a graduate student. And I just always thought about Oksana as a really strong teacher, a very ethical person, a very honest person, a very spiritual person. Do you still love teaching?
I do. I do like never before. And, you know, I believe great things happening even online, and I see kids coming on time, and I see kids don't want to leave because they want to learn. And I see that the kids are, they're all capable.
Great.
They want to learn.
Great.
And that see that, you know, engagement and see that desire to learn, you know, it pushes me to go and keeps me going.
Honestly. Well, thank you, Oksana. I think we've just about run out of time. And again, we've been talking to Oksana Brzezinski. She's an ELL specialist. And a friend of mine and a graduate student and a wonderful person. And thank you, Vashon, for listening. And Oksana, we'll talk to you later.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofvashon.org and look under the Shows tab.